This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to Roundtable Talks here on RNIB Connect Radio, where we bring people from different walks of life together for big conversations. Today, we're talking about making and creating. Expressing ourselves through making art or creating things can be a great outlet for our emotions, help us focus on and immerse ourselves in the world around us, and be a way to connect with others. It can be a source of pride, joy, and for some, a source of income. Blind and partially sighted people can bring unique perspectives, techniques, and ideas to the world of arts and crafting, but may face multiple barriers. A lack of image and audio description can block people with sight loss from engaging with existing work for inspiration. Crafting and technique lessons or tutorials often rely on visuals to explain the process, which can add obstacles when learning new things, and attitudinal barriers may discourage them from making or sharing work. We're joined today by a panel of four blind and partially sighted creators to learn about their love of making, some of the lessons they've gained, and their tips for getting creative. Our first panelist is Kelly Dingwall. Welcome, Kelly. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Kelly Dingwall, and I'm from Edinburgh. I generally do some crafts while I'm at home, like I'll enjoy doing some loom knitting, for example, but I'll also go into RNIB's Hillside building and I'll do craft there with the assistance of some of the volunteers there, where we do bigger projects or things that I just can't manage quite on my own. Got a wee bit of sight so I can almost see what I'm doing most of the time. And besides crafting, I enjoy playing games like Pokemon, and I also play Dungeons and Dragons and organize some stuff relating to that around with RNIB people. So yeah, that's probably enough about me.
Thanks, Kelly. Our second panelist is Sean Healy. Welcome, Sean. Can you introduce yourself?
I'm Sean Healy and I'm based in Cardiff, Wales, and I have a genetic condition called ocularis albinism type 2, which means that I have some vision, some good working vision at times, but it's very blurry and I'm light sensitive. I'm a painter working in acrylics and oils, but I also create collages to create tactile work for my visually impaired friends. I crochet really badly, but I include this in some of my work. I sell my artwork for charity, mainly guide dogs, and I've exhibited through Wales through Disability Arts Cymru in exhibitions, and I've also created one of the artworks for guide dogs for the Paws on the Wharf exhibition last year in London, which was a really great project to be involved with. I go to local art classes and try and develop my skills that way.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Sean. Our third panellist is Alan McIntyre. Welcome, Alan. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. I'm Alan McIntyre and I'm in Edinburgh. I've been diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa a number of years ago, but I've always liked to do art, mainly painting. But as my sight loss has progressed, I've tended to try other types. So I also do collage, but we've worked on some 3D work more recently. And I go to an art group at the Hillside RNIB offices, which was really helpful. And I try and exhibit with the group or with myself to keep promoting my art. And I'm trying to make music now as well. So I'm learning music production because I've always liked music as well.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for joining us, Alan. And our final panellist is Julie Hale. Welcome, Julie. Please, can you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Julie Hale. I currently live in Ballymena in Northern Ireland. I'm partially sighted. I have had ongoing issues with my sight since I was 11 years of age and totally lost my sight in my right eye several years back and struggling with the left at the present. For me, I love to work with clay. I had the opportunity to do that with RNIB and also glass and painting, which I absolutely loved. But besides that, I love making gemstone jewellery and cards. I was a florist all my life. I love to paint and I love to knit and I love music and most importantly, I love people. So that's kind of my sort of story.
Thank you so much for joining us, Julie. I will come to you first, Sean. What is a technique or a piece of art that you've made recently that you're really proud of?
I think that was, I mentioned the Pause on the Wharf exhibition. That was basically, I was supplied with an oversized guide dog fiberglass model that I then painted and designed. It was painted in acrylics, but I painted it the same as my retired guide dog, Yuri. So it looked like Yuri, but then I put postcards, paintings of postcards on it of guide dogs in different parts of Britain. And I had a lovely reaction from that as part of that. There were 25 of the dogs, and I went up to London to see it, and it was lovely to be part of an event like that. And I had a lovely reaction from people on the way it looked. And my guide dogs have been instrumental in me getting to art classes and being involved in the community, and they often do feature in my work. It's a little bit of an obsession in my work. There's a lot of dogs. Was quite symbolic for me of what my guide dogs have allowed me to do, and celebration really of how my artwork and my visual impairment are linked.
I think that's really interesting, and I've seen some really interesting kind of applications of that since I've been at RNIB, and just my own kind of takes on doing artwork and things. Like, for example, one of the things that I found really helpful when I started doing more art was actually doing it digitally, just because if I'm doing digital art, for example, I can zoom right in to the point that I can see individual pixels, which means that I can do more detail and be more accurate than I ever could kind of just with pen and paper, for example. It does mean that I will hyperfocus on the tiniest, teeniest little detail. However, that is like, no one is going to notice this, but I know it's there. And I'm like, is that what sighted people feel like when they're doing artwork? Don't think I like this. But it does mean that I can just do things in a way that works for me. And just, if you mess up, you can just undo, which is very nice. So that can be really interesting. I've never really done a lot of work specifically around visual impairment in my work. Most of the time it's just whatever kind of comes to mind in the moment, and then mostly taking an idea and running with it. Sometimes to its logical conclusion, sometimes veering off in an entirely different direction that I didn't think I would end up in.
Yeah, it's very interesting listening to the other panellists, because art is a very personal expression, I think, and obviously listening to the others, you know, you're learning about, you know, what inspires them and what you focus on and how you judge yourself. For me, you know, when I lost my sight, I've always loved art. I've always loved it. I wouldn't say I'm brilliant at anything in particular, but the opportunity to learn things and the opportunity to be part of things I've always loved. But when I lost my sight, my consultant said that I would never ever be able to take part in any art projects again. I'd never do art again, because it's impossible. And what I've loved about RNIB and being involved in their projects is that's proved them wrong. And, you know, you can be involved so much in different things. You can continue to learn. You can continue to get joy, and you can continue to build your self-esteem by working with different projects and with different various forms of art.
Julie, can I just say that's really interesting, because as someone who was born visually impaired and had to deal through life with people's views of what I can and cannot do, including ophthalmologists telling my parents I would never be able to do this and that, I think working to prove so-called professionals wrong in their perceptions is very, very important. I think, again, I was lucky in school. I had an art teacher who encouraged me, helped me adapt my work even when I was young, although I was in mainstream school, to adjust, work bigger, change the type of materials I used so that they were more tactile. So I was very lucky. I had that encouragement very young
That's really interesting. I joined an art course at a university, and I was really concerned about that because I had so many apprehensions about how I'd actually physically manage to get there or get to the class. And they were really supportive because they gave me a support worker, someone to help to actually get to the class, and they would help to take notes. And they had a pre-meeting beforehand with some of the staff, so I was a bit apprehensive about taking all of it. You're like a very special case. You know, I felt a bit kind of negative in some ways, but they were actually just trying to work out how they could support me because they hadn't really had many or any blind people doing art. So it was actually really good that they were encouraging and gave me a lot of support. So that really helped to, you know, facilitate me to do the course. And I suppose it was unusual for them. So yeah, it was quite stressful. But once you got there, and you had a wee bit of help, then you could actually participate. And one of the lecturers actually said that she changed most of the course curriculum to be more orientated towards being tactile or less visual orientated. And she said it was one of the most exciting courses she'd taught because it was more refreshing for her to have a different approach to her teaching because she's just used to teaching sighted people, you know. And the other students as well, they had a different experience from the course, but they all seemed to really enjoy it. It wasn't an obvious, you know, this is for poor blind people, you know. It was just so inclusive and natural to feel, do different techniques, you know.
Yeah, I just think that that's very encouraging because it is about learning to learn a new skill in a different way. And when you have the opportunity to work with something that's tactile, I had the opportunity, for me personally, it was clay at first, and then I worked with glass art, and after that, painting, which I did all of those things through RNIB. It was very, very interesting because it would have been something I would never have put my hand to, but yeah, I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, having that bit of support and encouragement does make a big difference. I've also been blind since I was born, well, registered blind. Like I said, I've got a little bit of sight, so it's all just been kind of normal. And I think I had a few really good art teachers in secondary who were pretty keen to just help me adapt, find ways that worked for me. But it was still, there were still limitations. Like, for example, when I was younger, I was really interested in potentially doing stuff related to graphic design in uni or like doing something related to art. But everyone always told me, be more realistic, do something else. So I ended up doing psychology, which I was still interested in, but that hadn't originally been what I wanted to do. So now that I've got my psychology degree, I'm not really using it all that much. I'm kind of falling back more on stuff that I enjoy doing, like crafting, spending time with people, like playing instruments, just far more of the creative side of things than what I originally thought I would be doing like 10, 15 years ago.
What does creating add to your life?
I feel that it was so hard to hear you won't be able to craft anymore, or it's impossible to do what you've done. But the opportunity to learn and keep learning keeps inspiring you. It's wonderful because you're learning something new with each project that you do, and not only are you enjoying that, but obviously it builds up your self-esteem. And it's a privilege then to share your work with other people and with friends and with family. It's a privilege to be able to talk about it. It's a privilege to try and encourage other people to do it. And you're challenging yourself, but also you're actually figuring out, actually, I can do this. You know, okay, I have lost my sight, or I'm in the process of losing my sight, or I'm partially sighted, or I have no sight. Whatever way you are on your journey, you are still able to do something meaningful for you. And I find that really encouraging. And for me, I was able to work with, you know, the clay and the glass. And then I was able to use those tiles and things that I'd made, and we presented them then to the Blind Golfers Association as on trophies. They made them into little trophies and presented them to those that won the golf tournaments, and that was really lovely. It was lovely to be part of that as well, because you were also praising their work as well and their skills and their joys.
I like what you say, that Julia, where your work is becoming showing awareness in your community, but it's giving you such fulfillment just from a simple kind of process. But it's interesting you're saying about learning as well. I find everything, if you have an idea that comes to me, I just feel as though I have to try and make this happen. And either, well, every new work becomes an experiment. And the most recent work, I just had ideas that were collecting for a long time, but it's more 3D kind of tactile work. And we just had to learn, with a lot of experimenting with kind of helpers in the group, how we could physically make this thing happen, and learning with new materials and more tactile materials. And it's just so enjoyable, you know, this idea of making stuff. And as the journey kind of goes along, and I'm finding that art's becoming a kind of three-leveled process of either doing it completely independently, or sometimes I just need occasional help, or other times you just physically need someone to do a small part of a work for you. But that can be difficult to kind of give up your independence when you're making work. You have to learn and work with that.
In my case, I have to say, it's creating is part of my well-being. I have mental health issues, so in creating and producing work, it allows me to move from day-to-day living and struggles and go into another part of me that's more positive. And I find that by creating and just being involved in my work, it's a release from day-to-day life as well. Also, I'm an educator, so it also allows me to educate others on dealing with sight impairment and also emotional trauma. So my work does reflect me a lot, I think.
I guess I'm used to having to give up some form of control for people if I'm not able to do something entirely on my own, which can be frustrating, but I know overall it can be really helpful. For example, while I was working on a project recently in the RNIB craft group, we were making a papier-mâché and cloth-mâché dragon. There were certain bits that I definitely needed a lot of extra help with in terms of painting or getting things together in a way that kind of worked. But I've kind of just adapted to needing that help and being happy with it. And now George the Dragon is quite happily perched in Edinburgh's art and library. So that's quite nice. The librarians are pretty fond of him. They're quite happy having him there on the shelf. Heard someone else mention they do a bit of crocheting. I've tried that. It has not worked, no matter how many times people try to describe it. I do loom knitting on my own, which a friend taught me. Very patiently, getting my hands with showing me what to do. And from there, I was able to figure out quite a lot on my own. So like, I'll make socks, I'll make hats. I've made a scarf once using it, which was quite fun. So it's just become something that's really nice to do, especially with my hands. If I've got a book on in the background and I can just relax and kind of sink into it, if that makes sense. It's just, if I'm able to do something on my own, I can just focus on a book and just let my hands do their thing, especially with something like loom knitting. Whereas if I'm doing digital art, for example, or practicing an instrument, then it's very much more a case of I'm actively considering each brush stroke or gesture that I am making to try and make things. So yeah, the quiet when you're able to just kind of lose yourself in the craft can be really nice.
Yeah, I mean, I understand where you're coming from on that, because being involved in art or doing anything in the art is quite independent, and asking for help is quite difficult. Mm-hmm. One, to explain so that they're on the same page as you. And obviously you want to do it independently, but you shouldn't be scared to ask for help either. Up until 2 years ago, I'd only lost the sight in one eye, and now I'm struggling with the other. But, you know, I've had the privilege of being in and these classes where, you know, maybe you can help somebody that is, you know, with colours or maybe whatever tactile thing they're trying to get. Everyone's work is completely different, and I absolutely love being involved in it because I get to see their viewpoints and their own personal art. It's not just about you and what you enjoy, but I've also loved being in the classes and seeing what everybody else does. And it's inspiring. It's so inspiring because in communities in general, like, and even in myself personally, I would have probably sort of said, well, I can't do this or I can't do that now, you know. But actually, you're proving actually, yes, you can. It's different. And actually, it's beautiful, you know. And I find it absolutely fascinating that you can continue to learn. It builds your self-esteem. Everyone's work is different. You're having fun. And you're continuing to learn all the time. You go away with pride in your work. And you go away feeling happy that you can share your work.
For blind and partially sighted people who have been told that they can't make art or who have had a change in vision and feel like they might have to lose a practice or a craft that they love, what's something that has helped you reconnect and find a sense of empowerment and joy in your work after a tricky period?
I mean, it's literally taken years to build up our, keep our small art group going of visually impaired people, because years ago, there was a research project in Glasgow, and they were looking for visually impaired people who are interested in art, because he was developing some new process for audio description, but they couldn't find enough people in Glasgow. So people from Edinburgh had to go over and participate because there hadn't been enough people interested or thinking they could do art, probably. And they don't have the same galleries that put on regular audio descriptions, because the National Galleries and other galleries like the Fruit Market have built up monthly or regular descriptive tours for visually impaired people. So that's an acceptance into big galleries and institutions. And you have workshops and audio descriptions of work that make you really appreciate work. So that gives you fuel for your kind of mind and your energy to go and then make your work or at your art class or do something at home or bring in materials so you can actually do things. You almost need some kind of infrastructure, or what really helps if you've got an infrastructure. I can imagine if you're just doing work at home and have no one else to kind of bounce ideas off, as you're saying, in a joint kind of community class. Yeah, so it's nothing, it shouldn't stop you, because you can reach out or find inspiration online about different techniques, but it's really helpful to have that group participation, and you do enjoy making work together.
I actually frequent a sighted art class locally that I can walk to. The art teacher there has really helped adapt things for me. Also, it's the only place I can use oils, because I can't use oils at home because it transfers too easily and I can't see where they've gone. So my art teacher actually checks me before I leave the studio to check that I'm not covered in paint that's going to go everywhere, because it's on my nose, it's up my arms, it's because again, it's that transferal thing. Acrylics aren't so bad, they don't transfer too much. My guide dog's usually covered in it, so again, it's that Aww. It's that having support around you from people who understand and are prepared to support you, I think that's one of the things. And again, it's the thing of adapting. I can't follow in a class with images, and it's instruction as well. I have to adapt everything that we're doing, and my art teacher is really good at that. I have to take photos of everything so I can bring it close to my nose to see what we're looking at, what we're being inspired by, or whatever. I can't work like other people do, but I adapt. And again, the materials, I use bigger brushes or I use bigger canvases so that I can participate, but in a just a different way. And it's that acceptance of the fact that you have to do things differently, and particularly a lot of the old people who were losing their sight with glaucoma or whatever, they come up to me and say, well, you've inspired me to look at my art differently. I can still paint. I'm not giving up, because I've seen how you adapt and adjust and get on with it, and you still enjoy it. that's lovely that they sort of look to me and think, oh, that's not the, you know, losing my sight is not going to mean that I stop doing what I love. You've just got to adapt and find solutions along the way to still be able to do it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I lost both eyes 2 years ago. And I felt like I'd lost my independence, certainly scared to go outside. I wasn't able to drive. You know, I felt like I couldn't associate with anyone. I felt really, really lost. But I have to say that being involved with RNIB, they helped me through these situations. They not only offered practical help, but, you know, they helped me to rekindle my love and my joy for art. And although I have, you know, had several surgeries and I have some sight back in one eye, I still find it difficult and I still struggle. But I have rekindled my love and my joy for art. And I would encourage anyone really to not give up, you know, throw yourself into it and have a go. And you'd be surprised at how much you can learn, how much you will adapt, how much pride you'll take in your work, how much joy it is in giving your work away, sharing your work, the friends and the people that inspire you along the way to do these projects. They're amazing, even listening to the panel today, you know, and finding out what everybody's doing, you know, it's very inspiring. And anybody that, you know, wants to try and fund these projects, like, that's so important to do, because it does really help everybody in the community to find a sense of accomplishment and joy in their work going forward.
I think with that, probably one of the things that helped is, this is going to sound a little weird, but finding something to hyper-focus on. If I'm not interested in something, then it can be really hard to kind of drum up the motivation to do something. But if my brain is like, ooh, what if we do this? And then will not let me rest until we consider all the angles, then I will try and find a way to do it. So that kind of forces my brain to think like, okay, so we want to do this. Realistically, what can we do? And what can we get other people to help us do? Admitting and knowing your limitations, knowing yourself, what you can and can't do, because there are going to be things you can't do. There are going to be boundaries that you can push, and pushing against them, you can learn about things that, hey, you didn't realize you could do. That's awesome. You realize you could do them. And then other times you're like, okay, no, I've hit my limits. I know I can't really go past this point without assistance in some form, be that technical or another person. But finding out about that just means that you figured out more about what you are actually capable of. And there's nothing wrong with being able to do some things and not being able to do others. You know, like the dragon that I mentioned earlier, for example, like, I was able to do quite a lot of that on my own. Like, we designed him, I decided how many limbs he had, the positioning of certain things, how some of the fabric mache was going to be draped, how we did the scales, the color scheme, all of that. But there were certain small details that I just could not manage on my own. Like, for example, using the whatever glue was we used to attach the ear drying clay to certain bits. If I tried using that, the likelihood is I would have stuck my fingers together, because like with oil paint, it gets everywhere.
I find that listening to all of you guys giving me a few ideas to maybe, you know, even challenge myself and learn more on the art side of things, on painting. So well done, everyone.
It's lovely to hear everyone's experiences and how we've all tried to overcome things in our own ways, but also had to accept limitations. I would have loved to have been one of those fine artists who could do detail, but I've accepting that. And as people say, what I produce is quite different, and that makes it unusual and interesting. So accepting that my disability is part of what my artwork displays is part of the journey.
I've been learning to kind of give up that as well. The just enjoyment of kind of creating or using a new material, feeling the textures, and even though I can't physically see what I've done, or I can make a collage at that time, I can remember what I've done, but afterwards I don't know what it is. I need kind of reminding of what it is, but then that doesn't matter. You just do that and then give it on to the world, or you can put it up in an exhibition and, you know, you can't actually see the 2D work, but it didn't matter because you've enjoyed kind of making that. And there was a project we did where I tied a pen onto the end of my white stick, and I used that to kind of navigate on a large piece of paper objects that were put on the ground. So I was kind of tracing where my stick was kind of trying to find these objects. Because I thought, well, why don't you use your stick, the thing that you use to kind of navigate with, use that to draw? So this became a huge, you know, big roll of paper. And you could see all the lots of marks where my stick was trying to navigate. Through doing collage, I just ripped up paper and was sticking it on with my hand, because other people were cutting it out because everyone could see and they could cut detail and scissors and putting things together. But I just ripped it and I laid out the things in order. I knew that was black, that was white, and the brown was textured because I could feel the texture. So I just, you know, did things and repeated it on the wall. And people said, but they were just interested, well, that looks, you know, so kind of different and unique, because it's everyone else's controlled regular lines and precise cuts, but you found it brought out your own kind of independence. You have your own kind of style, and that is actually what you are. So it becomes unique and distinctive for your work, which is, it takes a while to kind of realise and appreciate and just kind of go with that, you know?
Well, thank you so much, Alan, Kelly, Julie and Sean, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.